Hey, hey, Potters. Welcome to episode 186 of Cospod Podcast for all things cosplay. I'm back, kids. Did you miss me? No.
Yes.
Not a single one of you missed me, be honest.
I did. I totally did.
Sorry, guys. I had computer problems to where I nearly lost everything. My computer would not boot. It just did not like me at all, and I had to restore it.
Amber had problems. It's okay.
I have many problems, but currently a computer ain't one. Until the next time it is.
Applause, applause, applause. Nice. Yes, I held down the fort for 30 minutes, so it's okay. I did good for 30 minutes. I managed to talk for a solid 30 minutes.
Woohoo!
I was so proud of myself.
But we are recording this episode bright and early for you guys so that we can keep on schedule, because for the last 7 years, we have been bringing you guys these episodes every 2 weeks, mostly without fail. Except for the few times life got in the way.
Yet we still managed to keep a fairly consistent schedule.
Yay! We try. And we also keep a fairly consistent schedule of cosplay.
You got that?
No, I'm just sitting here thinking of my own schedule going, I do like 2 costumes in a year now.
I'm lucky if it's 2 costumes. I was just happy to get one done last year. Like, I was like, it's settled.
To be fair, I think you managed to do both Snow Whites, or was that this year?
This year.
So you've already done 2 this year.
Well, no. I got the other one done last year.
Okay.
So I'm at 1.
Okay.
I've got the 1 ticked off.
I'm still working on the first one.
It's
then
a
again,
process.
I didn't start it until February.
It takes time. It's all good. Everyone works at their own pace.
It does, especially because I get so frustrated looking at it. And it's pretty rare that I actually get frustrated with my cosplay. But this is one of those times where the painting on the linen weave is taking so freaking long that I just want to ball it up and throw it somewhere. The problem is that the fabric is so lightweight that it's not satisfying to throw it because it doesn't go anywhere. It just, you chuck it and it just kind of goes right in front of you. It's like I have to wrap it around a lead weight and then chuck it to make it satisfying.
And then immediately retrieve it, take said weight out of it, and then press it so it's nice and clean
exactly,
again.
Exactly, because then I feel guilty that I just did that.
I understand very
like,
well.
I'm so sorry. Please, cosplay gods, please don't ruin this for me. Don't spill anything on it. It's okay. Thank you.
I just had a moment and I needed to vent.
Please forgive me my cosplay sin.
It's almost like you need to get some spare fabric specifically for that reason, so you don't take it out on the real fabric. Have backup fabric handy just for that reason.
That is true. Given the sheer amount of backup fabric I have, I have a lot of choices.
See? I should get you a fabric quarter pin.
Unfortunately, most of them are in very small pieces, so it's not quite as satisfying.
It could still work. I mean, you do have to do more pickup afterward, but
yes, Allie, that is pretty much how I feel. I would love to, you know, wrap it around cement. My landlord would probably not like it if I chucked that at something, since I do not officially own this place at the moment. But I do certainly appreciate the sentiment. I could just wrap it around one of my styrofoam wig heads. Then it would at least like make it across the room.
Have a little bit of a thunk to it, but wouldn't do any damage.
Right. I mean, the wig head can dent a little, that's fine. It's not really the shape of my head anyway.
None of the wig heads that we buy are ever the shape of our heads.
No. But I did notice that Walmart now sells them. So if you guys wanted the uber cheap wig heads, you can get them at Walmart. I believe they're like $5 or $8.
Nice. Thanks, Walmart.
They're with the rest of the styrofoam things, which incidentally, we were looking for homemade ways to make floam, because TNT Cosplay Supply completely ran out of their Oh, what is the name of the product? You just reviewed it.
Oh, let me bring this out. It is called foam clay.
That's the one. We were looking up recipes on how to make this. And of course, Walmart and most of the craft stores sell the little foam beads that you basically grind up and you can make your own.
Totally doable.
They have recipes with and without borax.
Of course they do. People will get crafty and cheap when they need to.
Well, it's a matter of whether or not you feel like working with what could potentially be a toxic substance. Then again, most of cosplay is working with toxic substances.
Even the ones that are non-toxic can become toxic over time.
Do not ingest your cosplay, folks, or your cosplay components.
That's the tagline of the show now.
Do not eat.
Fine cosplay.
Cosplay is friends, not food.
And there's our tote bag for AllCon next year.
Yes. Then again, that one might say cosplayers are friends, not food. We're already getting contest ideas for next year, guys.
We're that ahead of the game.
I mean, we have all this wisdom and experience from being cosplay elders.
Sure. So
that's been my cosplay update. What have you been working on?
I actually have been working on some stuff during the week. I guess I will start with my America birds that I painted last night. I didn't realize they were America birds until I was working on the first one. So I've decided to finally get my butt moving on the embroidery of my Game of Thrones costume, which means stenciling out and painting the birds onto my organza. And basically all I'm doing is I'm just giving myself a rough idea of which colors are going where. It's going to be much more ornate when everything is said and done. But it was like, okay, let me at least get this on, know where I'm going, see what's going to happen next. And then they all turned into America birds and America birds and America birds. It's really kind of funny after a while because I was like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. But hey, if it works, it works. Because when you get down to it with the final image, I mean, you can see where I'm going with it. There will be a lot more detail, I promise, as my webcam attempts to adjust. So yeah, that's what I did a little bit of yesterday during one of my crafting streams. And of course, more beading. Lord help me. All the beading. And then other than that, I have also been doing some fun patterning, so I can share that with you. Present of a weird little thing that I'm working on that I'm not going to talk about other than showing you an image. It's a bodysuit with a lot of marks on it. And mostly it was just really funny that I got to the end of it and I was like, man, I doodled all over this thing. But if anybody knows about patterning and drafting and draping and all that stuff, the more marks you make, the easier it is to put it all back together. Because I got to cut the sucker up and put different fabrics on it. And if I can't remember how this all pieces back, I'm going to spend hours trying to solve this puzzle. I don't want to do that. So I'm going to mark the crud out of this so that way I know what I'm doing. And it'll make it a million times easier to put it all back together when I stitch it all in. So yeah, I've actually accomplished way more than I anticipated for the week, given how busy I've been with life and work and chaos and whatnot, and having a sick dog on top of that. So I'm impressed. And it's only been a week since my last cosplay update, so go fig. Yeah, that's all I got though.
That was actually something that Jackie Craft emphasized during her panel at AllCon, was making the registration keys so that you can reassemble everything. And I think everybody has a different marking method, at least from the cosplayers I've seen. Everybody kind of has their own method to their madness.
It really depends on what I'm working on. If there's a lot of intricate little pieces, I tend to do a lettering system. But if it's just one giant piece and there's maybe only three or four things that I need to cut up, it'll usually be like lines in different colors across each other. So that way it's like, okay, here's the red line, here's the green line, here's the black line. This is what attaches to that. It just really depends on what I'm working on.
I actually have surprisingly few markings. But then again, that's because I don't really necessarily have markings to reassemble it back together. I only make markings when I'm fitting it.
Gotcha.
Because
that makes a difference.
Most of the time I'm so accustomed to working with commercial patterns that I know what the pattern pieces for like a shirt look like for any commercial basic pattern. Shirt, blouse, tunic, all the pattern pieces look the same. I have the same shape, the same thing for pants. So generally I don't have to worry about that part. It's only when I have to work with the weirdo patterns, like gloves, and then I have markings, because it's like, the heck, man, where does this piece go? Because they're all different sizes. And if you don't put it in the right place, then you can't reassemble it so that it looks right.
All of those gussets and all those slats. Uh-huh. And you're just like, oh, why glove you have to be so difficult?
It's the worst when you put a piece on backwards, too.
Man, that annoys me to no end. I hate making gloves. Like, I love gloves. I hate making them. They anger me every single time. They're worse than sleeves. Because I can never put those in correctly.
Sleeves I've actually generally come to make my peace with, because now I don't feel so embarrassed in altering them. I find that if I don't like the gathering, then I just chop off more of the top of the crown of the arm, the pattern, and then I don't have to worry about gathering as much because there's less surface area.
That makes sense. Actually, that's kind of a smart way of doing it.
Math, kids. It actually does have a use.
If they had only told us this in school.
I know. Doing basic algebra and basic trig actually have a purpose in life and a point if you're a cosplayer. It's awesome. Now, yes, it would have been much easier if they had told me these things in math class before I actually, you know, had to go off and learn them and just went,
what madness is this?
Well, because I was studying music at the time and the joke went, musicians only have to count to four. Why do I need the rest of this?
How much did I have to count to? I think for me, it's 32. No, I have to go up to 64 now with the f-stops. But even then, it was just even numbers. It was like 2, 4, 8, 16. Oh, well, okay.
Well, in other words, everything is a multiple of four.
Yep, so you really didn't have to
do much. Or
number
up to four because, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4.
You have to multiply
musicians
a little.
Musicians only have to count four beats.
And it didn't really matter even then. You just went like, okay, okay, I figured it out. I'm done.
Yep. Unfortunately, with cosplay, we have imperial and metric to worry about. So there's that too.
That's always enjoyable.
We're really sorry, guys. For those who aren't in the U.S., we know we're still on the imperial system.
Sorry. Our bad.
All right. On that note.
Yeah. Let's have fun with this. So the topic that we were supposed to discuss last time, but got pushed back to this time, is what is the future of fan conventions? You know, what do we think is likely to happen? How are they going to change? How are they going to grow? What's the situation going to be like? And we're actually going to break this down into two subtopics. It's going to be the changes that are likely to happen based off of current trends. And then the second part is going to be what we would like to see happen with conventions.
I want to get the depressing change out of the way, in that hotel parking and badge prices are going to continue to go up.
Oh, I mean, everything's going to get more expensive because capitalism.
And the depressing, I say it's depressing because when you look at, you know, particular cons that are large here in the States, for a basic badge, the price is approaching $100.
Oh, by and large, without even trying. I mean, I'm trying to think of the cheapest convention, like price-wise, that I can remember within the last 2 years. And I don't even think it was under $60 for a 3-day weekend. Which, depending upon the value of the convention, that still might be a steal. Mm-hmm. You still might be getting more than your money's worth out of it. So, you know, that's something else that you have to factor in. But, like, there were, I mean, Amber can also attest to this. I mean, there were days where the olden years, the long, long ago, where it was $30-$40 for a 3-4-day weekend. Those days don't exist anymore. Even on the smaller conventions, they're upping their prices. Things cost money, unfortunately.
And that's just the price to get in the door, because one of the other changes I foresee is that more and more panels will start to cost separately. Things like fan panels, autographs, photo sessions, workshops, that sort of thing. I think those will become the norm, and I think they're going to start charging for all of them, whereas I'd say probably 95% of them are currently free.
Yeah, especially when you get to the point that now conventions are asking for bigger, better guests to come in, then they all have different price points. I mean, Comicpalooza in Houston this year is getting Daenerys, that actress from Game of Thrones, and her autograph ticket sales are at $195 a pop. And that's just for autographs. That is not photos. There's no selfies, none of that stuff. And you imagine you're already having to pay $60 to get into the door, plus another $195 for just one autograph. It adds up really, really fast. And that's just their fees. That's just something that they're earning extra to be there. That's not including the appearance fees that the con is having to pay them to get them to show up in the first place, which is also why the badge prices are going up. It's a cycle.
And not only are they getting bigger guests, they're getting more of them.
Oh, absolutely. My goodness. Like, Fan Expo Dallas lineup is continuing to grow by leaps and bounds. And I just keep looking at that list going, like, where are they going to put everybody? It was really cramped last year. And last year was when they had Ben Affleck show up. And I was like, oh, it was horrible in that section of the room. Like, you didn't want to go near the autograph area because it was just, you were a sardine. You were sandwiched in. It was horrible. I hated it.
But that said, my hope, you know, this is going to be a bit of what I'd like to see, but I'm also kind of hoping that this is what's going to happen as well, is that you get more bang for that buck. Conventions are starting to kind of expand out to 3 and 4 days instead of 1 and 2 days. I foresee that continuing, especially over holiday weekends, but also they're starting to broaden out their schedules. Many more panels, especially fan-run panels, and now they're even doing conventions within conventions. So you have a gaming convention within a fan convention or a cosplay convention within a comic convention, where it's almost like a little mini, its own convention. And I hope that that will continue because it's nice to be able to have choice, especially with all the different fandoms we have now.
Yeah, that's actually one of those nice transition into one of the points that I written out for myself, is that a lot of these cons are having more unique experiences because what they're trying to do is bring people in and not have them just spend money on the event, but also have them leave wanting more by having more of that fan connection. Like, this is the one unique thing you can do at our con and you can't do it anywhere else. Or you can have the DC superhero fan experience by meeting all of your favorite superheroes from the movies or from Marvel or for whatever. And that is coming with the higher price tag, but you're also getting something out of it that you won't get anywhere else. You probably won't experience it ever again. This is your one-time opportunity. But there's also like exclusive merchandise too that you can only get at some of these events. Like SDCC, NYCC are very notorious for that, where you'll get like the pop vinyls or exclusive comic books that are only available at that event. You can't get them anywhere else. So it makes people more enticed to want to go and spend the money to get it. So that kind of helps tie in all of that, you know, wanting to bridge that gap between, yes, you're spending more money, but you're getting a unique experience out of it.
Now, that said, I have a feeling that that also means that conventions are going to be trending more towards fan-driven content, which means volunteer panels. Means that you and I aren't just going to be attendees, is that we're going to be expected to offer content if we feel like we have it to offer. And that may have mixed results, I think, because you have the panels that particular types of fans want, and then you have the type of panels that people feel like they can offer with a certain amount of quality, where it's more of a fan panel versus an academic panel, like a workshop. And there can be a lot of dichotomy between those two things. And that doesn't even take into account the whole, I guess you'd call it the standard family-friendly age group versus the adult age group, because that can also be two very different kettles of fish when it comes to content.
And I think it really depends on where panels are going in the future, because I'm seeing more people who used to do a lot of content at conventions are moving their products online. So they're doing more of the streaming stuff. They're putting their videos on YouTube. So they don't necessarily need to go out to an event and teach a panel. They can do a 90-minute session online, throw the video up, and they get all their views and hits right there, even more so than the small audience that they could capture at that convention. And I have a feeling more of the seasoned panelists are going to start moving in that direction, and we're going to get some newer, younger groups at the cons themselves. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever, but I have a weird feeling that because the seasoned veterans are starting to leave, we're going to have this weird time frame where we're not going to have a whole lot of good content. It's people working through that learning phase, trying to figure out, how do I run a panel? How do I make this work? What do I do to captivate people's interests? And in doing so, they're going to kind of flounder and fluctuate until they get their groove. And that takes time.
I think it also means that we're going to be continuing to edge, and I hesitate to say backward because I don't mean this to be derogatory, but we're basically falling back towards the 101 content. There's just not as much intermediate and advanced content for those who have been attending conventions a while or who have been doing this a while. And I get it. You know, it's actually a lot easier to teach 101 content, especially if you aren't a seasoned panelist. It's actually a really good structure. It gets to be a little repetitive, honestly, because it's offered at every convention.
We see it all the time. When we go to a con and we look at their panelists and it's like, it's a 101, it's a 101, it's a 101. We don't even think about it. We're just like, okay, we're not going to go. We're not going to record it because we know exactly what's going to be presented. And that's unfortunate because it might be that the presenter is really fantastic, charismatic, knows their stuff inside and out, but it's not a benefit to us and it's not a benefit to our listeners. So why do we spend our time sitting there for an hour when we can focus on something else that might be more important? So one of Allie's comments, I want to quickly read it off, is she said, I would love more interactive panels or workshops. That would be really nice. And I'm hoping that conventions will eventually get to that point where they offer more workshops, because there are so few of those that are available. And if they are available, it tends to be very beginner entry level stuff that just makes me go, okay, I can look that up on YouTube in 5 seconds. Thanks. More content, please.
That is a little bit of a downside to having something like YouTube and Twitch, is that so much of that content is now readily available from a lot of the more experienced panelists. And to an extent, it does kind of crowd out some of the younger panelists, because you can look at that content and go, there's no way I can do that content any better. You know, they've already done it. It's like seeing your cosplay idol cosplay one of your favorite characters. You're like, okay, that's it. It's done. Like, it's over. I will never cosplay that character because it's already been done by someone who can always do it better than me. That's not the case with panels. Everybody has something different to teach. And one of the best ways to kind of get yourself out there, if you're going to do a panel at a convention, is to find some facet of whatever you are teaching and find a way to be different about it. Tackle a unique facet of that particular hobby or interest, or take it in a different direction from what everybody else does, because that's basically what 101 is.
To kind of go off of that and give it as an example, one of the panels that I love to teach is my cosplay runway and cosplay judging panel. And it's because I saw a lot of people who were teaching about how to build a skit, but no one was covering the 30-second walk-on aspect. No one was covering how do you prejudge? What do I need to bring in for prejudging? What do I expect at a cosplay contest? And so that was my spin on those panels, was covering all those other aspects that everybody else was overlooking or choosing not to talk about. You can definitely take a topic that has been done before, just find your own twist on it, find your own spin, find something about it that you really enjoy covering and speaking, and make that your focus instead.
And speaking of volume, and by volume, I mean quantity, I think that definitely fan conventions are going to continue to get bigger.
I think it's weird because I think, and I spoke about this with Ejim from Cosplay in America, I think we're going to get this weird thing where we're going to have the big conventions get even bigger. The small conventions are still going to be there for those one-offs where we just need a breather and not be feeling like sardines for a weekend. And then I have a feeling that the middle sector, like for us in Texas, maybe middle is like 5,000-ish people. It'll vary from state to state. But I think the middle sector is actually going to start dropping off. We're either going to get really super big cons or really super small cons. We're not going to have a whole lot of in-between. Those in-between groups need to find a way to either define themselves and get the big guests and hopefully have that pay off so they can become bigger, or they're going to have to start downsizing to accommodate the smaller crowds who are opting to go to the much bigger, more expensive conventions. We're going to have that gap starting to form.
Or they need to have something for which they're known specifically, like, for example, Anime Fest caps their attendance, but they're also known as having a reputation for being a highly relaxing, social networking convention. And a lot of people like it because it's not quite so small that you don't have very many experiences to choose from, but it's not so big that you feel overwhelmed. It's kind of that happy medium where you can have your experiences, but you can be relaxed in doing it. And I think if you're a convention and you can kind of develop that sort of niche for yourself, that they can be successful, but it takes a lot of work to do that.
It really does. And sometimes it's more work than what the convention is willing to afford, to be frankly honest, because you got to hire extra hands to come in and help. And volunteers can only do so much for free for their weekend badge where they're still working.
And speaking of that, this is actually one of the ones that I less like to mention, but I think conventions are going to get more corporate.
Yeah. I mean, you look at something like ReadPop. They own so many conventions. They handle the PAX group. They usually do a pretty good job. I will give them that. They're pretty smooth and they run things very, very well. But you know what their system is like. You know exactly what you're going to get out of them. It's the same thing with the Fan Expo group, because Fan Expo has multiple events, not just here in the States, but also in Canada. You know what you're going to get out of it. You know the experience that you've paid for. And it makes it a little bit difficult to have diverse content between all of those, because if you go to this event from Fan Expo, you know it's going to be the same at this Fan Expo and this one, or the same thing with Wizard World. It's this Wizard World, it's that Wizard World, it's this Wizard World. Having that diversity just kind of starts falling off the map, and it's a little unfortunate because you want to have a little bit of change between these cons. Otherwise, they start coming out the same. It's all cookie cutter.
True, and the sort of atmosphere and the point of the convention changes a bit. Because when you have that corporate backing, the venture capital type backing, they expect you to make money because they are there to make money. It is a business venture. Whereas conventions that have a little bit more of a nonprofit or a not-for-profit bent tend to take that money and reinvest it back into the fans, because in many cases they are legally obligated to. And it has a very different result. Let's put it that way. I'm not necessarily saying it's a negative thing, because having that extra corporate backing with the money can actually bring in more big name guests, bigger experiences, nicer venues. They can expand the convention so that it can go into multiple hotels because there is that much content. You can have them go longer so that instead of being one day, it's 3 days. So there's a lot more that they can work with. It just has a different feel to it.
So on the flip side, though, I think the nice thing with the corporate ventures is we're starting to see more of the niche cons. And I'm talking things like LeakyCon, which is all Harry Potter. There's that traveling Game of Thrones con. There's a Supernatural convention. So you're having these events that are more targeted. So you're not going to have as high of an attendance rate, but the people who show up are loyal fans of the show, of, you know, the movies or the franchise or whatever it may be. And because of that, I think it's also bringing in more of that fan unique experience that people really, really want and they're willing to spend the money on. So it's definitely helping attract newer, unique cons to the scene that we may not have seen before.
Happier things I have noticed, and this may seem like a little thing, unless you are one of those people, they're offering more food choices for more diets.
Yeah, I know, right?
And it used to be where you would basically only be able to purchase snacks from them, and you wouldn't even be able to get full meals. They didn't have street trucks, street vendors. And now when you go to conventions, not only is there an entire fleet of food trucks, but they have all these different types of food trucks. And then the restaurants inside the hotels offer special deals to the attendees, and the hotel actually sometimes even has a mobile unit where they bring out different types of food offered by that hotel, and they just, you know, basically package it up like sandwiches and chips and a drink, and they'll sell it that way. Oh, it's so wonderful to be able to have those options and to have options that people with dietary needs can choose from instead of, you know, basically having to bring all of your own food with you and then just hope that you have a chance to run back up and forth to your room to eat it. And I suppose, you know, this being a cosplay podcast, we should probably talk about the cosplay thing.
Well, what's funny is that, like, the changes that I'm thinking are likely to happen with cosplay, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot, but I have like a number of things that I would like to see happen personally, because the cosplay realm is kind of in this weird state of fluctuation, but I don't think it's really going to change. I think it's going to be kind of the same old until we hit a breaking point of, hey, we want new content, or hey, let's change up contest, or hey, let's have bigger prizes or no prizes. Or maybe just stop doing contests altogether. I don't know. But I think it's going to be quite a while before we hit that point, because cosplay is continually becoming popular. There's always new people coming into it. I don't see it making any variations anytime soon. It's probably going to be the same old for a while.
I think cosplay is getting a little bit more casual. Like things like original cosplays tend to be accepted more. And people are starting to kind of drive towards the more casual cosplay because it's more comfortable at conventions, especially the conventions that are getting large enough where you have multiple hotels in the middle of August and you have to walk between them in the heat. Or worse yet, go around the city in a giant parade in the heat in the middle of August.
So are you thinking that it's more likely that people are going to be moving towards casual cosplay and not so much of the big fancy stuff?
I think for general purposes, yes. I think the cosplay contests are going to continue to basically just get bigger and flashier. You know, basically everything that we've seen at World Cosplay Summit, all the light up effects, the sound effects, the various transforms, all those things are basically eventually going to make their way into cosplay. And I think it's going to keep building that way to where basically you end up either having to be a prodigy or you have to have a lot of resources at your disposal to be able to compete in those and have a chance of winning.
I think it's getting to the point where it's going to start separating the casual cosplayers or the cosplayers who can only do it on evenings and weekends because life versus the cosplayers who do this as a job.
Right. Being an adult, there's going to be,
yeah, there's going to be a very clear difference between the two on the contest scene. It might get to the point where we start seeing two unique contests where we have the contest for the hobbyist and the contest for the pros. That would be kind of nice. Because it really is hard to compete against somebody on the skill level of like Amazon Mandy. Because I'm just like, I will never be as glorious as you because you do this for a living, but you're also super, super great and you've learned so much. I don't have time to learn all that. So I will never be able to compete on your level.
That's generally why at AllCon we do have skill and class divisions. So that you compete in similarly skilled groups. And it would be actually, I think, helpful if conventions move towards that.
So I'm going to quickly read Allie's comment. I think overall more cosplay, big cosplays during some of the days and then casual cosplays for the rest of the time. And they kind of do this, a lot of people do this at Dragon Con too, is like they'll have Saturday be like the big super amazing cosplay day, dress up time, woo! Because that's also parade day too. And they usually have most of the photo shoots, like the Marvel photo shoot, the DC photo shoot at that time. But then like Friday, Sunday, Monday, super casual, easygoing, whatever I can throw on so I can walk around town and be comfortable. That tends to be the go-to for Dragon Con. And I can see a lot of other conventioners starting to do that same trend.
That's actually an interesting question from Luster Candy. Do you think more cons will do like Ushikon and go 18 plus due to kids being bad? I'm kind of two minds on this, simply because going 18 plus does tend to focus on the people who have money to give you. So that is kind of its own thing. The kids being bad, I think, is going to be a perpetual thing. It's kind of just a generational thing. It's a maturity thing. However, that said, I think that conventions are going to shy away from things like Hentai Fest. Because of the reputation associated, the liabilities associated, and just the general sort of reputational management you end up having to do. When you host an event like that, basically, I think that the risks are going to end up being much higher than the payoffs in the end. And I think cons are just basically going to either remove it entirely from the convention or they're going to downsize it. And basically, it'll end up being effectively a hotel after party. It'll be a party in someone's hotel room instead of formally sponsored by the con.
And it's hard to really say because I don't know if Ushikan is like this. And Lester Candy, you can feel free to chime in and let me know. But it seems like it's meant to be more of an adult-friendly convention. So it's not necessarily about, you know, adult 18 plus, you know, NC-17 content. But it's meant to be more, you know, hey, this is a mature group. They want to do other things. And they don't have to worry about kids being around. You know, we can have alcoholic drinks out and that's okay. You know. But that also is really hard to market because we have it in our mindset that adult means, oh, naughty stuff's going to happen. No, that doesn't mean that all the time. And that might be also another one of those things that's really hard for a convention to overcome is how do you say to potential attendees, hey, we're an adults-only convention, but we're not talking about hentai here. We just want this to be a convention so adults can go hang out and be nerds together without worrying about tweens coming in and roughhousing or whatever the case may be.
So it's almost like having an anime convention with more of the atmosphere and demographic of a Comic-Con.
Okay. Yeah. Lester Candy. Thank you. Yeah. Ushikan is not about hentai. It's more grown-up folks appreciating the hobby. That's what I thought. Much appreciated. But yeah, as far as like the cosplay aspect of it, I really don't think a whole lot of changes are going to happen. I mean, there's stuff that I would like to see happen. And we've kind of already touched on this, but encouraging more advanced panels, because right now so much of the content is beginner 101 this, 101 that. We really need to start encouraging and supporting cons that want to do more intermediate and advanced panels. And this is not just on cosplay, but this can be on art panels, fan panels, academic panels, history panels, whatever the case may be. And I wish more conventions would embrace this because, you know, we can only sit through so many of the cosplay 101s, the podcasting 101 stuff, because we're sitting there like, we've been here. We've done this for 8 years. We know. Can you show us something new that maybe we don't know about? It may not get the 100-person draw, but you still go get 50, 75 people that show up who are totally invested in this content. So that's definitely something I would like to see cosplay-wise.
I don't really have anything to add because I agree completely.
Yay!
Basically, it ends up being the same kind of panels that are offered each year. Even if they're by different people, it's still mostly the same content. And I say this because we've actually still sat in on some of them, even if we're not filming them.
And I do have another one. I would love to see cons open up and accept more cosplay-related content like photo sets. Because this is something that Anime Expo does. And it doesn't take a whole lot of floor space. You know, it's just a section of their expo halls that people can come up, take a quick photo, keep on moving. I mean, they had a ball pit 1 year. I mean, you just keep it lighthearted and fun, but something that people can interact with. And the cosplayers feel like they've had something tailored to them. It's worth their time and their investment to go in, do the quick photo thing, but then go spend their money in the expo hall too. Because, hey, you're already here. Drop some dollars. All good. And it's something that I'm hoping more conventions would start utilizing. But again, it's one of those things where unless we start speaking up and keep asking and asking and asking, they're not going to do it. Or they're just going to outright ignore us and not do it anyway. Because that's a thing too.
So I only have two, and I'm sure you'll appreciate both of these.
Uh-oh. Okay.
So the first is that I would like conventions to offer both online and offline ways to view their schedule in a standard format that is easy to read.
You'd think that would be so simple, but it's amazing the number of conventions that do not do this.
For those who attend the convention who do not have phones or who do not have phones with data or do not wish to load your app on their phone, and of course, there are people who are of ages who don't have phones generally on them anyway, both young and old. It's good to have an offline option. Yes, I know that means that you can't get, you know, real-time updates. That's okay. It's nice to just have a framework to work from because we know that things change constantly at conventions. We've been to enough to know that. And then, likewise, on the other side, for those who do have phones who wish to basically keep up to date with what's going on, then it's nice to have an app that is offered by the con, whether it's guidebook, whether it's your own custom app. Some cons basically have their own teams who develop their own custom app for that con, which is perfectly fine. I'm not picky about the platform. It's just nice to have both options to make sure that both sets of audiences are taken care of. And if you're going to offer an app and, you know, offline things like paper directories and such, please have information on local places to eat and where to park, or at least point out to people where they can find this information. It's really helpful to people who are traveling to you from out of town. But the other offering that I wanted to make, which we have covered enough times on our soapbox that I think it's squeaky clean, is more social media interaction with the convention that is not cookie cutter script. It's very disheartening as a fan to read the scripted response, and what you know is a scripted response written from basically what is probably a volunteer staffer when you're trying to get help to solve a problem. And it just makes you more irritated. And things don't go well. Not to mention that, you know, when you end up hearing about something that happened in rumors elsewhere before the convention formally officially announces things, it just kind of makes things look bad. Basically, just having that social PR presence that's very warm and inviting. And yes, I get that you have to protect your secrets and such, but just having that sort of transparency as best as you can and a sort of social warmth does wonders for a convention.
Because even having conversed with conventions as a media outlet, I mean, that makes a big difference too. That's a huge impact on us. If you're disrespectful to us, or if you're not responding to our questions, even something as simple as, hey, what is this event about? If you're not responding or answering, that's going to look bad on you. It just makes us even less involved or even wanting to cover your event because you're not taking the time to just answer 5 minutes out of your day, just a quick response to us. Not that big of a deal. So that's social media presence, especially given today's technological climate where everybody is always on, everyone wants their answers immediately. You can't wait 2 months to respond to people. You have to give them a response within 24 hours. People are still willing to wait 24 hours, but after that 24-hour period has passed, they immediately start hating you. And negative press is very difficult to get rid of. You want positive press, trust me.
It's also helpful that the responses are not only prompt, but polite and respectful and empathetic. Because if you're snarky, or if worse, if you attack the poster.
Oh man, those are the worst. Oh.
The community talks. And things like that tend to spread like wildfire. And having seen it from a convention or two or three at this point, it doesn't go well. And it makes you just really feel bad because you know that maybe they were just having a bad day. You know, the people who work for conventions are human beings too, but at the same time, it tends to blow up.
And it sours the experience. It's like, why do I want to spend my money with you if this is how you're going to react on social media?
And not just for that person and their friends, but anybody who reads that.
Social media makes a big impact. You may think your post is not getting reach, but you leave one snarky response or one bad comment to somebody's question, and it will blow up. Guaranteed.
You know, and on the flip side, if you have a very vibrant social media community that interacts often and positively, and you're basically constantly updating with new things, new guests, even if you're not talking about the convention itself, but you post, you know, here's a really cool article on something that's coming up, or hey, we saw this thing in the news that actually relates to one of our guests. They have this new thing coming out. Basically, if you just stay relevant and keep people talking and interested, it really boosts your community, its interactivity, and the number of people who want to join you to not just attend your convention, but to also join your social media community and bring others with them. And it's a really fun experience at that point.
All right. So I have a couple more that I'm going to throw out in there. They're not necessarily cosplay related, but they kind of tie in. It's mostly part of that, you know, what I would like to see from conventions. I don't know what's going to happen, but there you go. I would like to see more cons addressing harassment in a thoughtful and considerate way. And that also means taking it a step further and not supporting guests or even your con staff members that have a history of harassment. You know, you don't invite these people at the last minute and be like, hey, we're bringing in so-and-so, but he's got a really bad history. That's probably a big no-no. Because we as community members, want to support the conventions that will protect us, that will keep us safe. And we want to have a good environment to be in. And if they bring in a guest member or they bring in a staff member with a bad history, we're not going to support that convention. It's as simple as that. I would like for more conventions to address stuff like that because it's still an issue and it needs to not be an issue anymore. My first one, I love it. The more I read it, I keep giggling. Let's hear your thoughts panel worth our time. Because it seems like a lot of the times we go sit on those, we voice our concerns. You know, sometimes people do complain, absolutely. But there are people who have legitimate feedback that should be considered. And it feels like they're just paying lip service to us. Because there's some cons who just don't put forth any effort into putting those words into action. They just say, okay, we'll look into it. And then nothing comes of it. And then the same problems persist year after year. I think the smaller cons as well as the bigger cons are really going to benefit from the community and from the attendees. So if they plan to exist longer than another year, they need to listen to their attendees. I'm not saying you have to take all of their ideas under the belt, but just listen to us. I mean, seriously though, it's got to be more than lip service. You got to actually put our words into action because some of us are saying things that are important and will help improve your convention.
And have said them repeatedly in some cases.
Right.
Now, that said, you know, if they can't do certain things that we tell them in the panel, that's perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah.
But we would just like to be acknowledged that the convention has heard us. And it would be a boon, you know, if possible, and I know sometimes it's not, to explain in a general sort of way why this cannot be done at this time. Or say, you know, we need A, B, and C to get this done. And that's fine. Then the community will understand.
We'll feel like our words have been listened to and validated, even if they can't go through with the suggestion that we had. At least we know that they're listening and they took our considerations in. That's what's important. Okay, so next one I have is kind of be more towards like the smaller conventions, but I like to see this at the larger conventions too, is creating more meet and greet fan spaces or general hangout areas, general relaxing areas. We see this at Anime Fest, and there's kind of like that feeling at all con too with the restaurant below and the bar area. But if we saw it at places like Fan Expo or even at PAX, because they have a small little beanbag area, but if they kind of expanded upon that, that would be really nice because that's where a lot of great conversations happen. That's where you meet some cool people, you make some new friends. It's awesome time, but we don't get a whole lot of space in the convention area to really do that. And I think all conventions just need to have a chill out zone so people can kind of de-stress and breathe and not feel like sardines for 5 seconds. I know I said that like 3 times already in this episode, and that's okay. But I think that's necessary.
Particularly appreciated by those of us who have social anxieties or social disorders, especially at conventions where you are packed like tuna in a can, because we really do kind of just need that 30 seconds of space and calm to just kind of reset ourselves so that we can still enjoy the convention and not have a panic attack, which for some people can honestly just be debilitating at a convention. If you haven't ever had a panic attack, it's really hard to understand. But it's really nice to have just kind of those chill out areas where you can just take a load off.
Yeah, they're always really relaxing. My next one, which is probably going to be controversial, but I don't really care because it's my personal opinion, ending in character panels. I just really don't like them, but let me explain why. Because more often than not, and I'm sure it's because I've attended not many good ones, it's a lot of people who are very inexperienced, who are just doing it for the first time. They're just trying to get a free badge out of it. And they admittedly say, yeah, I'm just getting my free badge for the weekend by doing an hour of an in-character panel. They have no acting experience. There's no script. There's no prep. They go into the panel blind and it just comes into a jumbled mess. And I hate those panels. I think they're so poorly done. I'm just like, man. And which is unfortunate because there have been good in-character panels. I have sat in at least 2 of them that I can remember. And they were so well done, but it's because the people on that panel cared. They took the time to research. They made sure to do, you know, their scripts. They did their acting. They studied. They did what they needed to do to make sure that it was a great panel, not just for them, but for the audience, because that was what was important. And it's unfortunate because I'm souring the good people because of all the numerous bad experiences that I've had. And it's just, I just don't like in character panels, and I would like to see a whole lot less of them.
To be fair, there is one kind of major downside to the in-character panels, and this is why a lot of conventions have stopped running them, is that due to their improv nature, people will ask for fan service.
Oh my gosh. Ask
for adult content at those panels where there are teenagers present, and that has its own issues for the convention.
Which
does not go over well. And so it's just better for them to not even hold the panels because you can't control the content that's in them.
Yeah, the only ones that I've seen done really well have been anime dating games. And there was the PG version and the 18 plus version. And even with the 18 plus version, they still kept things pretty PG. But they were also very well rehearsed. They took their time. They studied. They did what they needed to do to make sure it was still a great panel at the end of the night. But yeah, when it comes to like those fan servicey things, I'm just like, oh my God, this is an all ages panel. Please don't. It's even worse whenever it's a bunch of underage characters that they're cosplaying. I'm just like, oh my gosh, guys, please don't. Thankfully, chat is agreeing with me. Thank you, chat. All right. And then my next one is stop inviting the same 5 guests every single year.
I shouldn't giggle, but yeah.
You know, there are so many cons that we've been to that really applies to. You know, add a little bit of variety, guys. It's okay. Spice it up a bit. Some of us don't want to see the same person 7 years in a row. I think they can take a little bit of a break. And then my very, very, very last point, I actually made a very list. This is a nice list. Just we as a convention community, not just cosplayers, but all fans and all attendees of conventions need to hold cons accountable for their actions. We need to stop supporting the scummy ones. End of story. Simple as that.
Yeah, the problem with basically saying, well, all my friends are going to be there and, well, I've already paid for the ticket and that sort of thing, it just means that the questionable behavior of the convention continues because they're still making money. And you kind of have to stick to your guns and groups for this to actually be effective.
And I'm hoping that because more cons are being brought to light about their scummy behavior and not doing things for the fans, that people are starting to turn and realize, oh, okay, maybe we shouldn't keep going to this convention. Hey, there's other stuff going on. I mean, there are a lot of conventions in the United States, guys. I don't know if you're aware of that. There are literally a convention every single weekend. I know in Texas, there's probably one every weekend, easily, if not like 20 in Texas alone, because Texas and California.
There are multiple for every weekend. And there are many websites on the internet that will happily tell you when and where they are. Anything else on the list?
That was the last part of my list. I thought that was a very important one to end on.
Indeed. All right. Well, I don't have anything else either. So I believe we can call an end to this episode 186 of Cosplay the Podcast for all things cosplay. Of course, if you guys have things that you think that conventions will be doing here in the near future or things that you would like to see them do in the near future, we highly encourage you to join in the conversation on any of our social media, which you can, of course, find here.
The wipey screen.
including our shiny Discord channel, where, of course, we have been chatting about these very topics. You can also email us if you so choose. We are podcast@cospod.org, where, of course, you will get multiple responses because that's how much we love you guys. Otherwise, we hope everyone's cosplay is going well. We will wish you guys a wonderful evening, a wonderful weekend. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.